When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
NBC Sports Football Morning and American columnist Peter King. What do you think about the Chase Thomas podcast?
I'd like to plug the Chase Thomas podcast. Listen to Chase Thomas. You'll be a smarter sports fan and obviously a much better human being.
Matt Chernoff from 680 The Fan's Chuck and Chernoff Show here, and I want to say thanks for listening to today's episode of the Chase Thomas Podcast. You can find it on Apple, Spotify, and all your favorite podcast apps. Chase Thomas went to Parkview in North Georgia. He's a local Atlanta kid, and he won't let the Luka vs. Trey thing go. He interned with us back in the day, and you'll always remember him. Anyway, definitely go check out ChaseThomasPodcast.com where you can find all of Chase's previous episodes, all of his articles, and do him a solid. Leave him a rating and review if you're an Apple Podcast listener. Reminder to listen to our show, Chuck and Chernoff, Monday through Friday, 3 to 7 on 680 The Fan, and subscribe to my podcast as well. Welcome to Matlanta, wherever you get your podcasts.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, hello, and welcome back to another episode of A Pod Divided here on the Chase Thomas Podcast, where I'm still the aforementioned Chase Thomas, coming to you live from Knoxville, Tennessee, Everything School HQ down there in Decatur, Georgia. My good friend from the University of North Georgia alumni, Matt Green. Matt, good evening, sir. How are you?
Good evening, sir. It is good to be back with you. Everything School. I know you've been seeing the Georgia baseball team making some noise. Who's it? Charlie Condon, dude's hitting bombs like every day. Like,
just to be clear,
leads the country right now.
Just to be clear, the man is hyping up Georgia baseball, and they're off to a great start. And he second guessed
grand slams every day.
He second guessed who the best player on the Dogs was. You want to know how I know you haven't been paying attention to Georgia baseball to this point? You haven't heard the announcers say Charlie Condon's name. To this point, you're guessing here, Matt Green. You're seeing on Twitter
Absolutely.
That he's doing
well. I'm not a hardcore baseball guy, but I just
what's
have
it gonna
to
take?
Throw...
Georgia's okay. They're right there. They're improving under Wes Johnson. They're moving in the right direction. Hey, why don't you tune in? College baseball is great, man.
It just doesn't move the meter for me. You know, it's cool. I'll check it out every once in a while. You know,
you gotta get into it, man. The weekend series are big time. Like it's a growing sport, man. Especially the Braves aren't back yet. What are you doing? You don't have anything else to watch on the weekends. What are we doing?
Oh, I mean, the Braves aren't back, but I mean, it's like weeks away. So baseball season is happening.
SEC play starts
college
basketball.
We're right in the mix of college basketball, baseball starting, like college baseball. So low on my list of priorities. Go Dogs, though. Hit more grand slams.
I love college baseball. And Charlie's a beast over there in Athens. He's going to be a first rounder. He's a problem, man. Georgia's offense is good. Tennessee's offense, though, better. They're back to 2022 form as they sweep Illinois this weekend. They won Saturday with no run rule, 24-1, Matt Green. Saturday. They beat a big another Power Five program 24-1 on Saturday. So Tennessee baseball Very Much Back is one of the best programs. I mean, they never left one of the best programs under Tony Vitello, but in terms of top three, like this offense being what it was 2 years ago, we're inching closer and closer to the Death Star being fully operational once again here in Rocky Top. And as you know, Tennessee basketball clinching the regular season SEC title for the men's side. And yeah, everything's cool HQ, man. 1 week away from spring practice for Nico and company and the football team. But I don't know. It just, you always wonder, you're like, am I going to get tired of the winning? Am I going to get tired of being good at everything? And it hasn't happened yet, Matt Green.
The pretty good at everything school. We'll leave it at that.
Well, Matt Green, still a lot of college football to talk about on this very show. We wrap up our big conference preview, betting preview, that is, that for these futures that are out months out of the 2024 college football season with the Big Ten. We have our schedule review series with Tennessee, which I am very curious to get your perspective on based on how 2023 went for the Vols versus expectations and how the schedule ultimately played out for them. And some dog bites on the defensive side of things for Georgia here in 2024. And then what we'll kick off here with a lot of pushback this past week. So we know that it's probably the college football playoff is going to head to a 14-team playoff by 2026, Matt Green. And then immediately we're like, is it going to be 14? Or are they just going to finally get to a nice number 16, just like in college basketball, just the sweet 16, this, that, and the other? Just, it feels better. 14. It's like 17 in the NFL. Like 17 is just annoying. Let's just go ahead and get to that 18. Like if we're not going to do 16, let's just go ahead and amp that one up to 18.
Who's doing 17?
The NFL's been doing 17 for the last couple of years.
Not 17. No, it's seven on each side. So it's 14.
No. I'm saying 17 regular season games. I'm saying the number in regular season games.
Yeah.
It's just annoying to hear the number and you're like, I don't like this. I don't like 17. I don't like the odd number. But in terms of where things are headed, we have a good idea of where things are headed. But you and I think, disagree on a few different parts to this. But I wanted to first pick your brain on the SEC Big Ten automatic bye scenario that would have been factored in. It looks like it's been tabled for now based on the pushback from everybody involved outside of the SEC and the Big Ten. But I'll just go ahead and say, Matt Green, I understand the optics aren't good for the SEC and the Big Ten champ to get an automatic bye in a 14-team playoff, but these are the two best conferences. They're the two biggest, strongest, most amount of talent, hardest to get through and hardest to win. I don't hate I agree with whoever wins those two regular season conferences should actually get an automatic bye in that 14. I get the optics look bad for the rest of the quote unquote power four or whatever, but we can stop pretending that it's the same. And Greg Sankey said it after the SEC championship game of like, I'm paraphrasing here, but you remember what I'm talking about, where it was like, we're pretending that it's like the same thing, like we're watching the same thing across all the conference championships over that weekend. And it was different. Like Georgia, Alabama looked different than Iowa, Michigan, you know, like there's just, I don't think there's anything. It's like saying the quiet part out loud, which is the SEC and Big Ten should actually probably get automatic buys if we were to go to 14 and with that kind of model. I don't know. I actually agreed with it. What did you take away from that?
It's just completely unnecessary. I don't know why we're overthinking it so much. Like that the strength of the conference is factored in. Like we don't rank teams, like, you know, people joke that they rank records, but they don't rank records. You know, there's undefeated teams and weak conferences, one loss teams and weak conferences that are back in the 20s or something like that, because we know different teams and different conferences have stronger schedules. So it's like, it just doesn't make any sense to me. Like, in what world is there not going to be three teams in the SEC that in a 14 team playoff, like, or in a three teams from the Big Ten? If there's not, it was a really down year for the Big Ten or the SEC. Like, they shouldn't get three teams in. Like, that sort of thing can happen. And there's a cyclical nature to this sport that different conferences can be better at different times. And it's just, it just seems like over legislation. Like, it just, you don't, it's probably what's going to happen anyway. It just, it doesn't seem like you need a rule for it.
Yeah. I mean, what does the I mean, when you think about it, though, like, should they just agree to it? Like, is this something that they should ultimately agree as the better for the sport? Like, if you're going to go to 14-team model, do you think it's fair to have the SEC and Big Ten champ year in, year out, get an automatic first round bye?
No, I don't think there's any reason to. It's most likely going to be one of the top four teams every single year. So it's just, if there is some years where there's we can all see there's this powerhouse Texas Tech team or something that everyone agrees is the number one team in the country, or Clemson or Florida State. Like, there's some big brands still, Notre Dame, that aren't in the Big Ten and the SEC. It just seems to me, I don't get it. Like, I saw Josh Pate recently. I don't know if you saw, he had, like, if he was in charge of college football, he basically had like 8-10 team conferences, and then
Good. I liked it.
Yeah, I really like, in some of those historic conferences, like the Southwest, the Big Eight, and the Big East, you know, making a comeback. And it made a lot of sense. And I feel like with a model like that, where we have like 8-10 team conferences that are actually geographically, they actually play each other and everything every year, it would be great. And that's when I could see automatic bids. We have 8-10 team conferences. Yeah, give 8 automatic qualifiers, and then, you know, 6 at large, or 8 at large, whatever you're talking about, going to 16. Like, I could understand a format like that. But with this condensing we have with the conferences, the consolidation, I should say, like, we don't need an extended playoff. Like, now we're just becoming the NFL, and we don't want that. I feel like now the 4-team playoff makes more as much sense as ever, as we're getting more to, like, kind of a quote unquote power four, like that. It's making it more logical sense. Even if the Big Ten and the SEC are stronger than the Big 12 and ACC, it's still making more sense with the 4-team format. So consolidating the conferences while expanding the playoffs just doesn't really compute, in my opinion.
Do you like the 3-3-5 format?
3-3-5. What do you mean?
Oh, what they're proposing?
Like 3 Big Ten, 3 SEC, and then 5 of
no,
that,
and then
that doesn't add up.
So it's 3 Big Ten, 3 SEC guaranteed, and then
no, it's 2
Big 12, 2 ACC, and then 1 Group of 5, and then 3 at large.
See, I don't know. I don't know. It's kind of like when we went to the BCS, from the BCS to the playoff. It's like, we didn't have to, like, change the way we were evaluating the teams. Like, I didn't understand why the change of the format made us change the ranking system. You know, it's, we have the BCS, it's given us the top 2. Okay, well, now let's use the BCS to give us the top 4. Now let's use the BCS to give us the top 12. Like, it just doesn't make sense that every time you increase the number of teams, that you also have to change how you're deciding said teams. Like, now there's less of a need for automatic qualifiers, because at the end of the day, the committee is going to want to put conference champions in. If there is an 8-4, 8-5 winner of the Big 12, like, I don't care that you won your conference. Like, you're not a good team. You went 8-5. Like, so most years that 9-3, even if it's a down year, a 9-3, you know, Oklahoma State wins the Big 12 or something, if they're ranked like 13th, 14th or something on conference championship weekend, I imagine the committee's just going to be like, they won the Big 12 though, let's get them in there. Like, I don't think you need, that's where the bias comes in. I don't think you need to legislate it, because people want that conference championship to mean something. It's like, only when it's really bad does it not. And if it gets really bad, we've seen 7-5 Pittsburgh make the ACC championship before, right? It's like, so it might not be that bad, maybe like 8-4 or something, but there's been years where bad team, like not very good teams, make it because they're in a weak division of a conference. That's not going to happen as much with the changing of divisions, but I don't see a need to legislate it when you have the wiggle room of 12 teams to choose from. Like, it's not that hard anymore. When it was 4, like, I can understand it a little bit more.
I also think it's funny, like, one of the proposed splits, like, did you see this? So this is from Dennis Dodd on CBS Sports. He said, quote, one such proposal being circulated would include 58% of combined CFP revenue going to the Big Ten and SEC, with the ACC and Big 12 splitting approximately $31 million. The remaining 10% would be divvied up between Notre Dame and the Group of Five conferences.
That's got to be like the biggest slap in the face to Notre Dame, right? Like, you guys got to join a conference. Like, if you want to get any of the real money, but I guess they're still getting that NBC money, so they're good. But
I also don't know if that's actually bad. Like, because remember, that's split among all of the conference. So I wonder if Notre Dame just getting that one, like, I don't know. I don't know how much of a difference that actually comes out of Notre Dame getting their own.
Notre Dame split. Gets 90% of that and the rest of the G5 or.
Yeah, like that's what I wonder. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. And right now it's not like all the conferences split the playoff money like equally, right? Like it's not even depending on how many teams you get in. So
it's $400 million equally between the Power Five right now, $80 million each.
To me, it's like you have these, you know, haves and have nots with the TV networks and all of that, and just the simple brand recognition and, you know, merchandise sales of the big brands compared to the other ones. It seems like the playoff is the one avenue where you can still split it up. I mean, I guess now that I think about it, if their conferences are so much bigger, then it only makes sense, you know, if it's for the SEC and Big Ten to be getting some, but because all the conferences aren't the same at this point. We don't have a bunch of 12 team conferences anymore. So I don't know. I guess something like that where the SEC and Big Ten, you know, do have the biggest brands. I'm sure that sort of scenario is unavoidable, that they get a bigger chunk of the pie.
Yeah, I think that's possible too. Well, we'll see how it ultimately plays out, but, you know, it is something to monitor over the next week. So I think they have to finalize it by the middle to end of March.
I guess why does it have to be conferences? Why can't it just be all the playoff money is divvied up 130 ways and all 130 teams just get an even cut of the playoff money? Like,
that requires a lot of folks sacrificing here that I just don't. It's a lot of people going against their best interests
if you determine that the G5 only deserves, like, you know, 10% of the pot or something, then like whatever the Big 12 and the ACC along with the SEC and Big 10, like just all of those schools just get the same amount of the revenue if you're one of the quote unquote big boys. Because I think it's, we already have a haves and have nots system here, and I hate to make it even worse than it already is.
I kind of want to look at how the NCAA tournament. So NCAA generated $1.4 billion in revenues for 2022. I wonder how the payout actually works for teams. I'm not sure. I'd have to do some research, but I am curious because the NCAA runs the tournament. They don't run the college ball playoff runs the, like, obviously those are two different entities. Like the NCAA actually runs and makes a bunch of money from the men's and women's basketball tournament. And then on the football side, it's run separately. So the NCAA isn't making money off the college football playoff.
Did the NCAA run the BCS, or is the BCS also its own kind of independent thing?
It's a good question. I'm not sure off the top of my head.
I don't know. I don't know why we have to keep changing the governing body every time we change the format and change the evaluation process. I don't know. I'm a sound like an old man yelling at clouds, but it's just been a lot of change happening in college football these days. And I don't know, hearing, like you said, Reese Davis talking about going to 16. We haven't even started at 12. We're talking about 16. Like, what are we doing, folks? Like, let's maintain the integrity of the regular season.
But like I said, going to be just as into the regular season as you were before. I'm not even worried about the integrity of the regular season. I'm just worried about the opt-outs and how it all works with the portal and with how busy December is. I just don't understand how this is all going to work. I am very interested to see how an expanded playoff and what all this looks like with where things are with the portal, with the timeline of classes starting in January, which is the nature of the beast. That is what I'm most curious about, is how this all actually plays out in real time. It's not about the regular season. I'm still going to enjoy every single regular season game. They're still going to be a lot of fun. They're still going to be crazy atmospheres week in, week out in the SEC. I'm more curious how this is all going to work in December and January, because it's
I've said it before, like, that's the easiest thing to move is the academic calendar. I know there's a history of how, when they want the class to start, when they want it to end, and when they want the graduation ceremony and all that. But the football pays the bills. And if it just came down to, like, no Division I school is starting class before the third week of January or something like that, I think that would go a long way in just, like, kind of clearing this up. Like, because you're not just having to switch teams like an NFL player. Like, you're also having to enroll in a new school. And I'm sure these guys get a lot of help in the transfer process and the sports staff and all that. But it's still another obstacle that, like, you can't just wait around for the best spot and free agent. Like, you can't hold out during free agency and join a team last minute. Like, you have to be enrolled in the school. So I think if they just move the academic calendar back, that could go a long way and kind of, you know, easing some of this chaos we have in the sport in December and January.
No, absolutely. Matt Green, Dog Bites, UGA. What's going on this week?
Yes, sir. So we talked a lot about the combine a week ago, but I feel like we mainly focused on the offensive side of the ball with Brock Bowers, Amarius Mims, Ladd McConkey. I think it's because there wasn't a lot to talk about when it comes to the defensive side of the ball for Georgia. The only four guys they had at the combine were the three defensive backs, Kamari Lassiter, Javon Bullard, Tyke Smith, and then Zion Logue, the only defensive lineman. And it just got me thinking, like, this Georgia defense, we kind of see Georgia, it feels like they kind of ebb and flow. Like, there's years they are heavy offense, and there's years they're heavy defense. And this past year was a year where they were really an offensive team. And I think that kind of overshadowed kind of how flawed this defense was a year ago. Like, you look at, I would say, you look at Georgia's defense of the last, you know, 5-6 years, like, this was 2023 was probably Georgia's worst defense since 2018. I would say it's the most points they've allowed since the 2020 team, but it was the first year they had allowed over 100 yards rushing per game since 2018. So the defense is going to have to step up next year, but in, like, typical Georgia fashion, like, they're only losing, like, four real key players from their team a year ago, other than, you know, Jamon Dumas Johnson transferring to Kentucky. But I think a lot of Georgia fans are kind of confident of what they have at that inside linebacker position. But you look at, like, what they've been the last few years, like, they've been middle of the road in sacks. I think 2020 is kind of the lost Georgia team. Like, I think Jake Fromm made an absolute awful career decision not coming back for his senior year at Georgia, because that team was absolutely loaded. That was the last time Georgia had a true, like, edge, elite edge rusher, with Azeez Ojulari and even Adam Anderson was coming on at that time. Like, that team was top three in the SEC in sacks that year. There was just awful quarterback play. And so the season is just remembered as an absolute failure. But that loaded 2021 defense that had all those first round picks, like, all of those guys were on the 2020 team, including a guy like Azeez Ojulari. So I think it's you look at 2020 and 2021. 2021, they're also second in the SEC in sacks. So both of those teams had elite pass rushes. Basically, every other year, Georgia's been middle of the road in terms of getting after, in terms of actually sacking the quarterback. So I think, you know, with what they bring back, This was not one of their best defenses in 2023, but I think with how much they're bringing back, I think you could see a big improvement in 2024.
When you say improvement, like, how much better? Like, where do you think? Because last year, I think what was different about this Georgia defense was you didn't have the Jordan Davis, you didn't have the Jalen Carter in the middle just wreaking havoc. It wasn't really the pass rush this past year. It was different with where Georgia was extremely effective in stymieing opposing offenses. It was the secondary. Obviously, really elite safety play. Obviously, they're always going to have elite linebackers. Chris Cole, I think, is going to be really good. Tennessee was down there to the wire. That kid is going to be really, really good, 4-star out of Virginia. I think he'll see the field sooner rather than later at Georgia. But, I mean, you're just loaded in that front. But what's going to be different? Do you think it's still going to be very secondary linebacker heavy? Or do you think we'll see more of those kind of freaks on the in the front seven that wrecked havoc like they did 2 years ago?
They definitely don't have those freaks on the defensive line. And I'm afraid they're never going to have those freaks on the defensive line again. I think Georgia fans might need to get used to, like, Jordan Davis and Jalen Carter might be like the two best they like ever have. But that's not to say that Georgia isn't going to have a bunch of good bodies on the defensive line. Like, Mykel Williams is a potential first round pick. Like, he's not that true, like, edge rusher, just pass rusher. He's just kind of that hybrid, more honestly, kind of a more of a 4-3 traditionally defensive end, like, but he plays obviously with his hand in the ground most of the time. But I think Mykel Williams is a potential star. Malachi Starks is a superstar in the secondary. So the secondary obviously loses a lot. And Dalen Everett, one of the only two starters that's back, like, he got picked on a lot a year ago. So I think that could be a worry, other than the fact that you got Kirby Smart, and now you're bringing in Tavarius Robinson. Like, Georgia's secondary is, like, it can only worry you so much. I kind of feel like it's not going to be as good as 2023, in my opinion, because I think Javon Bullard is one of the best defensive backs I think I've ever seen play at Georgia. Honestly, like, the way that man just had a nose for the ball, he would just always be in the area. Like, you don't make a lot of, like, undersized guys that just have that chip on their shoulder. Like, he just had a nose for the ball. So Javon Bullard, I think, is going to be a big loss. But, you know, just with the way this Georgia team recruits, like, Jonelle Aguero is probably a guy that's going to step in, a former five-star. It's like KJ Bolden, who knows, a true freshman who could step in. There's just, you just tend to trust that Georgia is going to have a certain level on the defensive side of the ball. And the fact that this was their first year where they gave up over 100 yards a game on the ground in like 5-6 years. Like, I think that's also going to put a chip on this team's shoulder. Like, that's not the Georgia standard. Like, you've seen Georgia the last 2-3 years make teams one dimensional. Like, they gave up 13 rushing touchdowns a year ago. They gave up 19 from 2019 to 2022 combined. Like, in 4 seasons, they gave up 19 and they gave up 13 a year ago. So, That's just not what you're used to seeing from a Georgia defense. And I just, it's, you know, you got Nazir Stackhouse back. You got, you know, some of these guys, Jordan Hall, that, like, were big time prospects that, like, you know, maybe this is the year they step in to a bigger role.
And then Pimba,
Christian Miller. Yeah. Samuel Mpemba was a big time recruit. So there's so many big time recruits. Jalen Walker is a guy that's my biggest criticism of the SEC championship, was I think Jalen Walker should have played about 4 times as many snaps as he did in that game. Like, he was the one, like, linebacker, and he's in such a weird role because he's an inside linebacker, I guess, like, by trait, but just to get him on the field, they just put him at outside linebacker and he just makes things happen. He just gets after the quarterback. I think he had 4 or 5 sacks a year ago and he hardly played. So I think Jalen Walker could be just a disruptor next year. And if he can be that breakout guy, maybe he's used more like a Channing Tindall, that he is an inside linebacker, but he gets after the passer as well. So I think just with how Georgia recruits, and, you know, with the fact that they're bringing so much back from the team a year ago, I trust that we're not going to see Georgia be giving up rushing yards like they were last season.
Malachi started as a freshman against Oregon, right, in the opener?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if he literally started, but, I mean, he was playing starter minutes that game.
I wonder, I mean, it wouldn't be outrageous to see KJ Bolden start right away for Georgia, right? I mean,
no, definitely not. And I didn't even mention Ellis Robinson. Like, that's like, some people as the number one player in the country, like, with, if corner is a weakness for Georgia, and you know, Julian Humphrey, he played well at times and had some injuries he had to deal with a year ago, but he was a big time recruit too. But there's a chance some dudes just get on the field and they're different, you know, like a Malachi Starks, like you're talking about. Like, that was a potential uncertainty. Like, how are you going to replace that safety spot with Lewis Seen that on that championship team? And you get a guy who's another future first round pick and a guy that was ready from day one. So some guys are just ready from day one. I don't think Georgia's going to, like, sit here in March relying on any true freshman to be to be a game changer for them to be, like, the preseason number one team. You know, I think they could win a national championship without having a freshman become, like, an impact player. But if one of these freshmen does emerge as an impact player, that just sets them off even more.
I like it. Matt Green, SEC 2023 schedule review series continues on, my friend. We did Florida last week. I want to get your perspective here, Matt Green. Tennessee, 8-4 after it's all said and done. 9-4 when you include the bowl win over Iowa in the Citrus Bowl. Sir, what say you about the 2023 season for the Tennessee Volunteers with how the season ultimately unfolded when you look at how the schedule came out for them based on how the opponents finished out this past year? Was it about right based on expectations, based on personnel? Did they underachieve? Did they maybe overachieve a little bit based on what we saw from this Tennessee team all year long? What say you, Matt Green?
So there's a couple different ways to dissect this, because preseason number 12, I would say without a doubt, they underachieved.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Achieved, right? Like that was underwhelming, an underwhelming performance. But you look at who the losses were to, should they have beaten Alabama? They could have, but it's like, you know, you don't want to talk about good losses, but it's like that was a game they could have won and Alabama just kind of took off in the second half. That's not a bad loss at Alabama. Like Georgia, yeah, like Georgia boat raced them at, you know, at home. But like, and you know, you don't want to lose to Missouri as a Tennessee fan. You definitely don't want to get blown out by Missouri, but like Missouri was better than Tennessee. Like Missouri was clearly, they were a top 10 team last year. So it's like, that's not a bad loss either. And then the one obviously is at Florida. Like Florida was just, that was basically their one good win of the entire season. And, you know, it came to Tennessee. So when it, and you just look at who the wins and losses were to, like, I don't feel like that. I probably picked them to go something like 8-4, 9-3, right? Preseason. So I don't necessarily feel like they underachieved. Maybe they underachieved like national expectations, but you know, maybe just national people were wrong. You know, maybe they were just never that good. So that's not necessarily Tennessee's fault that they didn't live up to whatever expectations were set. So, but I think when you look at the Florida game, I think that's the one that probably says like, that probably says underachieved more than about right.
I think that's right. I wonder how much of it was just if you, the Florida game, I think is the one bad loss, like you alluded to. The game was a mess all across the board. It got away from Tennessee. Florida, as we saw last year, not a bowl team, they were not good. And that was a tough one. But for whatever reason, winning in the swamp is just really, really difficult, regardless of who the personnel is, who the coach is. Just Tennessee going into Gainesville, for whatever reason, it's just really, really hard for them to come away with a victory. They get them at home this year, which is huge. Got them at home 2 years ago. And they still, I mean, were up on Florida, played really well, and Florida still had the ball with an opportunity to play for the win with the last possession. And Kamal hadn't, I think, had the game ending pick from Anthony Richardson. But like you said, I think if you told a Tennessee fan this is how it would have gone without context, I think most Tennessee fans hoped for 9-3 last year and 8-4, slightly below what I think fans would have wanted. But like you said, like, you lose to Georgia at home. Like it was a blowout. You didn't like that. You didn't like the blowout loss to Mizzou. That was frustrating. But by and large, like Bama, like you were up. I mean, the Bama thing hurts because you were up and you had full control of the game And if you had just converted one or two of those red zone trips in the first half from field goals to touchdowns, I don't know if Alabama still ends up winning that game and has that momentum or has enough to end them to have that second half comeback, because I think they would have been dead in the water.
Out of reach.
Yeah. Like that's one that's always going to sting. Cause I think Alabama really just, you played an excellent first half and you just didn't finish a couple trips in the red zone. If you had just one of those, I think it's a different situation there.
What was it, like 20-7 at the half?
Mm-hmm. And
like,
it should have been
like 31-7.
Yeah.
28-7, something like that.
And that would have been very different. It would have been a different feel for Alabama coming out for the second half. Being 3+ touchdowns down versus the 2 scores, which is what they ultimately were. I think
go ahead.
Well, the other thing too about Tennessee that Heupel I think is not getting credit for, and so when people are looking at, and I think this is part of why the 2024 total is up to 9.5 for Tennessee this year, is Heupel has protected home field. And I think one of the things that matters about Heupel's game plan and his scheme is when you dig yourself a hole against this offense in Neyland, which is one of the loudest, most electric atmospheres in college football, games can get away from you here because it's just so much pressure. The tempo is up. The crowd is up. Like, it's just, if you dig yourself a hole here of any kind, I think it's just really hard. You saw Spencer Rattler get really rattled on the road here. You saw Max Johnson, Texas A&M have real problems with Tennessee and the crowd noise and just getting anything going in Neyland. Like, they've lost one home game in the last 2 years, Matt Green. One. Like, that's it. And it was to Georgia this year. Like, there is something to be said where, like, yeah, the season didn't go exactly what you wanted, but 9-4, all things considered, with the offense being a lot, like the downfield stuff being taken away, inconsistent play with wide receiver and quarterback, I think by and large was a big win. And the thing that's forgotten about Florida is I don't know how that game would have gone if Cooper had been healthy and Cooper's playing center. I think having to shift Ollie over, who was playing left guard and is a solid left guard, having to move him over for that one was tough, especially with the crowd noise and everything else with Florida. I wonder how that game would have gone if Cooper's healthy and you have your starting center in that one to communicate and help with that kind of environment. But I don't know. I think by and large, Tennessee, I think you make the case overachieved with some of the offensive issues that they had this past year, with some of the limitations they had, to still get 8 wins and your only losses really outside of the Florida one being to 3 top 10 teams. And I just think that's good. I think you took care of business. They don't lose games they shouldn't lose.
I think that's fair. But I think if you told a Tennessee fan, like, you know, before the season started, you're going to go 9-4. You're probably thinking like, tell me we beat Florida. Tell me we beat Florida. Mm-hmm. Like, now you lose to Florida at Florida again. Like, that would have been frustrating because you didn't have necessarily the key win out there. It's the biggest thing to me that I'll push back with you is it's like the underachieving on offense part, or like you're kind of saying they're overachieving because the offense wasn't good, is it's like, since that's Heupel's whole identity is being the elite offense guy, that's where it feels more like underachieving. Because like, what's the opposite of a blessing in disguise, right? I get a curse in disguise. Like, I think the A&M win may have been like a curse in disguise, that if you lose to A&M at home and then lose to Alabama the week after, they were probably sitting at like 4-3 or something like that. Like, I think if you're sitting at 4-3, the decision is made to go to Nico. And I think that's the biggest miss of this.
Hold on, let me just go ahead and tell you.
Me.
No,
that's the
there
biggest
is zero
miss
chance is, they're going to Nico, a true freshman on the road at Alabama. That's not what's happening.
No, I'm saying if they lost to Alabama. So like, once they lose to A&M, then lose to Alabama, they have 3 losses already.
So then you're saying you're putting them in at Kentucky?
Absolutely. Like, get the freshman in there because this season is lost. I think the fact that they just had 2 losses and they played so well versus Alabama, it's like, well, you know, when Georgia comes to Tennessee, like, we, you know, there was still some hope that, like, the way this team is constructed, they could potentially win the East, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think if those chances for the East were spoiled earlier, I think then you're like, okay, we need to prepare ourselves for 2024, because that's the biggest criticism I have right now. Like, you've seen so many of the true freshman quarterbacks that are big time, that are the takeover as the full-time starter, a lot of those as a sophomore, a lot of those guys took over as the starter as a freshman, like the Jacob Eason or something, you know, getting like the last 7 or 8 games as a starter, like Matthew Stafford or something like that, Deshaun Watson. Like, there's certain big time quarterbacks that, like, okay, once the season's lost, let's see what the freshman, what the future looks like. And that's where you, like, you had the Iowa game, but other than that, like, I would have liked to have seen Nico play for 6-7 weeks, and maybe Tennessee goes 8-5 last year. And I think him having more experience makes me feel better as a Tennessee fan going into 2024.
I don't know. They're right there in the driver's seat for a playoff right now. And Nico played the bowl game, played really well. We haven't seen him.
We don't know what he can do against the SEC.
I mean, Iowa's got an SEC type defense, my friend. Iowa's defense is legit. It's a good
against
team.
Big Ten West teams. Yeah, they looked really good. Iowa, I'm not. Whatever, they're fine. He played well in the bowl game. Whatever. I don't even know how much to give bowl games anymore. You know, it's this season. It's going to be a second career start to open up the 2024 season.
I would just like him to have opening at NC State in the neutral site game. Like, that would have been a tough, like, welcome to the show type deal in Charlotte. But thankfully, there is a buffer before they get to Charlotte.
He could have a 5-6 game buffer right now, and you feel real good and actually know he's kind of taken some licks, and now he's ready for that SEC season.
Bryce Young didn't.
I don't know. We'll see.
He was fine. Bryce Young won the Heisman. Didn't take any licks the year prior. He just went right into it and was Heisman quarterback.
This guy, Bryce Young, this is in Alabama. Like, you can't just step in. The infrastructure isn't just there to with everything around him either. This is nothing like Alabama. He's going to have to be the offense.
Everything school HQ. And he doesn't have to be the offense. I don't have to do that. So that's all. Nico's going to be fine. Matt Green, Big Ten. Speaking of the Big Ten, as we finish up our betting win total over unders here on the pod, Big Ten wrapping up here on Bet Online. So final one here. When you look at the futures here for the Big Ten regular season wins, who is the most shocking to you when you peruse, which outside of seeing Washington in the Big Ten and teams like USC in the Big Ten, pushing that aside for a second, what's the biggest shock for you, sir?
That's a good call, because definitely the most shocking part is just seeing USC Trojans. That's not Big Ten stuff. I don't know about shocking. Ohio State at 10.5. I mean, I guess their schedule might be a little tougher than it was a year ago.
Oh, you think it should be higher, like 11.5?
I mean, they feel like they're going all in, right? So, like, with what they've done in the portal, like, bringing guys back too, like, it feels like they're kind of in an undefeated or not. You know what I mean? Like, I would kind of jump on Ohio State at 10.5, because I don't see them losing 2 games next year.
So, here's the thing, though. They go to Oregon, which is huge. Like, going to Oregon is going to be big time. October 12th. They go to Penn State. That'll be tough. They get Michigan at home, which is big for them. But Michigan is still going to be tough, because it's like, this is uncharted waters. Is Michigan going to be able to keep this thing humming without Harbaugh? They've beaten you twice. Three times or twice? Is it 3 times now in a row?
That's 3 in a row. Yeah,
3 in a row, right? Yeah. I mean, are they going 4? Are they going 4-4? I mean, that's...
It's one thing to lose to Harbaugh. If you lose to the next guy, man.
I agree with you, though, that by and large, this is a pretty nice schedule that I would probably lean. And Ohio State does not lose regular season games very often. If you go through the history here of the 21st century, not a lot of regular season losses for the old Buckeyes. They gobble up the wins in the regular season. So I tend to agree that seems a little low, but it's kind of funny that we're looking at 10.5 is kind of low for a betting win total for somebody like them. I feel like, to me, the more stunning, the more shocking over-under for the Big Ten right now, I think, Matt Green, I'm going to lean Oregon at 10.5. That's a lot of faith in Oregon to just burst into the scene. A lot of Dylan Gabriel belief there that he's going to fit in and this is all going to hum and they're going to be great out of the gate. Like, they're tied with Ohio State as the best odds to win the Big Ten right out of the gate here. I don't know. I think Oregon's got a sneaky tough schedule here. So they get Boise State second weekend. They go to Oregon State. So the Civil War will be early on the calendar this year. Oregon State's not going
to
be an easy
win. Shout out to those
win.
Guys keeping that one alive.
Yeah, good for them. Then you go to UCLA. You get Ohio State at home, which is good. But I mean, at Purdue, we'll be feisty. You have to go to the Big House. You have to go to Wisconsin, and you finish it with Washington at home. I don't know. I mean, I think you could see, I would hit the under on that for them. I don't think I would go 11-1 with that schedule for Oregon. I'm not the biggest Dylan Gabriel believer at this point. I think he's a good player. I don't know if he's a national champion quarterback. We'll see on that front, but I don't know. I think it's interesting too that the top of the Big Ten conference is going to be led by two first-year transfers that we're kind of unsure how they're going to be as like the best player on a quote-unquote title team, with Will Howard at Ohio State and Dylan Gabriel at Oregon. I don't know. I think that's an interesting wrinkle with these two as well, because we really just don't know what they're going to look like, and the expectations are sky high for the teams that they've transferred to.
No, I think that's a good call. Oregon is probably one of the more difficult ones to know exactly how good they are, because I feel like you could argue the Pac-12 was better than the Big Ten last year. Mm-mm. So it might not be a more difficult schedule, but actually seeing it in writing, you know, and seeing Camp Randall Stadium and seeing them go at Michigan, it's like, okay, this is no joke. There's not many atmospheres that match Michigan and Wisconsin out in the Pac-12.
No. Which of these win totals would you jump on the most? Who would you advise your buddies in the text thread of like, hey, I would jump on this right now?
I don't know if I would want to put my name on it, but you should probably bet on Iowa, right? Like 7.5, like Iowa almost always wins more than 7 games. Like, even though they shouldn't, like they just had the worst offense in like college football history and they won 10 games. Like, I don't know. I feel like as soon as I put money on it is probably when it all comes crashing down and things finally act the way they should. But, you know, I don't know how they do it, but Iowa just finds a way to do it. So I think Iowa's probably good to win another 8-9 games.
I love the Iowa one at 7.5. Like, I would actually pound the over there too. I think people have fallen way too far off on USC. USC at 7.5 is too low. I understand they open with LSU. That's going to be a big game right out of the gate. I mean, at the Big House, people are going to look at it. We don't know what Michigan's going to look like. I don't know if this is a bad one. You get Penn State at home. That's important. You get Wisconsin at home. That's important. You have to go to Maryland. That's not a big deal. Washington, it's going to be a good year to catch Washington on the road. We'll see what they look like, but I would probably lean there. You get Nebraska at home. UCLA breaking in a new coach. And then you get Notre Dame at home to close the year. I understand you're losing Caleb Williams and company, but Lincoln Riley, another guy who does not lose a lot of regular season games, I would pound the over. That's not a terrible schedule for USC. I think that looks like a 9-3.
How many regular season games did they lose last year? Like 5?
What did they lose? I thought they went better than that. I thought they were like 8-4. What did they go last year? He's 7-4 and 18 as a head coach.
They were 8-5 and won the bowl game.
Yeah. Okay.
So yeah, 7-5, and then won the bowl game. So
he's 19-8 at USC altogether.
Without Caleb Williams,
the previous
too.
Year. I don't know. I just am not.
I don't
I'm
know.
Betting against
I think
him.
That schedule looks pretty tough. Like you said, LSU at Michigan, Penn State, like at Washington, Notre Dame. Like I don't know. I mean, I don't know what Washington. They should probably take a step back next year. But
I think Michigan's going to take a step back.
It's probably true, but I mean, Michigan can take a big step back and still be better than USC was a year ago. And that's without Caleb Williams. Like Caleb Williams, it's not like this was just some sort of like, oh, Lincoln Riley's just a magician. A lot of their offense was straight up backyard football. Caleb Williams run around and make something happen. And he's just good enough to do that a lot. But I don't know. The offense without Caleb Williams, I think, has to take a step back. Like, even if it is Lincoln Riley and this is what he does.
I'm not going to doubt Lincoln Riley. I think it's a bounce back year. I think I'm buying some USC stock. I like the DC hire.
You should probably put a bet in on the guy to win the Heisman, because that's just a Lincoln Riley quarterback. You can probably get some good odds at this point.
Final one here. Who's the hardest to get a feel for on this list? Who do you, when you look at that number and you look at what you think about the team right now here in early spring, who's the hardest to get a feel for?
There's probably a lot. I think USC is probably a good call for that one. Obviously with Washington, all the turnover they've had. I think Wisconsin is one that, like, sitting at 6.5, it's like we've penciled them in as like a Big Ten title contender for so many years because they're in the Big Ten West. And I feel like this is going to be the year where it's like, maybe we kind of find out, you know, obviously this year isn't going to reflect what happened in 2018 and 2017. You know, there's no way of knowing how Wisconsin would have fared if they weren't just playing in the Big Ten West. But I think that's kind of what the narrative is going to be, because they've been a Big Ten title contender for years. And now we might find out, like, no, they're just like the 7th, 8th best team in this conference. And they're not a real contender. Because I think with Luke Fickell, like, I kind of expect a bump in year two. I think he's one of the best coaches in college football. He's on that short list, maybe top 10, top 15 or so. So, you know, I'm a big believer in year two. You know, we've talked about it a bunch, but I think Wisconsin is the one. I have no idea. Not if you told me they were playing the traditional Big Ten West schedule, I'd be like, okay, I'm buying Luke Fickell year two. But seeing, you know, at USC on the schedule and Penn State and Oregon, and that's not even including Alabama on the schedule in what, week two, week three. So, you know, that's a winnable game, I guess. We don't really know what Alabama is, and they do have to come to Camp Randall. I don't know what that's about. Nick Saban just afraid of road Power Five games, I guess. As soon as they had to play another one, he bounced. But but I think Wisconsin's schedule is like, I wouldn't be surprised if they were a contender. Not, I don't think necessarily a contender, because I think Ohio State and Oregon are kind of at that top level. But an 8-9 win season wouldn't surprise me. But like, if this team missed a bowl game, went, you know, 5-7, 6-6, that wouldn't surprise me either.
I would lock them in the over. I would go ahead and encourage folks to lock that over in. They went 7-5 last year in year one for Luke Fickell. His first year at Cincinnati, 4-8. Tough 2017. Following year, 11-2, big jump, and he was 11-3. 9-1 in 2020, 13-1 in 2021, 9-3 in his final year. The dude wins. I like Luke Fickell. I'm more dubious that they've now, Nick Evers, I think, will be a good quarterback potentially, but right now they're going to Tyler Van Dyke, and they tried it with Tanner Mordecai as the big transfer quarterback last year. They're back-to-back portal additions. I don't like that. It always makes me a little nervous with teams. And they're like, all right, you got to develop somebody at some point. I'm always just like, kind of like, I don't know if it's just to sub in a new guy every year on this front. But I just look at it. Chez Malusi is going to be the lead back. He's okay when he's just struggled to stay healthy. You lose Braylon Allen, who's been your dude for 3 straight years now. I'm curious what that does to this offense. But I don't know. I'm kind of like you. I'm pretty optimistic. And I think Wisconsin's always just been kind of an underrated program. I'm going to lock in over 6.5. I would encourage that. Go ahead and jump on that, because I could see it rising before opening week from 6.5 to like 7.5 maybe. So no, I would lock that in. I think I don't see a way that Luke Fickell's bunch go 6-6 or worse and miss a bowl game.
I don't know. I don't know if I'd put my hard earned money on it.
I'm doing it. Go Badgers. I'm here for it. But I will say, Tyler Van Dyke, that's going to be a big gamble there, up there. And what is it called? What do they call their guys?
What do they call Wisconsin players?
The fans. Like, what do they call the...
I don't know.
With the jump around stuff. I thought they had a name, like, for Camp Randall.
Jumpers?
I don't know.
But I was big on Tanner Mordecai coming in last year. What he did at SMU, and that was a big bust. So Tyler Van Dyke, I don't know. I was big on him going. What was his good year? 2022? Was it 2021?
I thought it was 2022. Maybe it was 2021.
But yeah, so we've seen Tyler Van Dyke be good at times. So, you know, that's going to be an X factor for sure.
All right, Matt Green. Any final things on the Big Ten before we wrap up here tonight?
You know, one team we didn't mention, the Cornhuskers. This is year two of Matt Rhule as well. And what are they at? 6.5?
7.5, actually.
7.5? What? How do you feel about the Cornhuskers?
Is Dylan Ariella going to
ready for 8 wins?
I would stay away. They're going to have to prove it to me. Like, they're the ultimate, like, I need to see it. I need to see Nebraska win 8 or 9 games before I'm really in on the, like, this is all going to work. Matt Rule, I mean, he's recruited really well. He's got it energized over there. But there's still just not a lot of... He's 52-50 overall as a college head coach, Matt Green. He was 11-3 that final year at Baylor. First year, though, he was 1-11. Second year, 7-6. He built up Temple as well. 2 wins, 6 wins, 10 wins, 10 wins. 5-7 last year. I just think they're going to be somewhere around that middle ground. They're probably going to play Rayola, true freshman. That's going to be hard. But, I mean, their schedule, I don't love the end to it. Like, this is brutal. It's not really evened out. So you go to Ohio State, UCLA at home, at USC, Wisconsin at home, at Iowa. I mean, the back half of their schedule, we'll know a lot. So they can gobble up a lot of wins early on, but I think that 7.5 is because the schedule is really not bad at all for them. They get Colorado at home this time, Illinois at home, Rutgers at home, Northern Iowa. Like, you're going to gobble up a bunch of wins early in this season, but I don't know. Feels like a Kentucky schedule to me. They feel like they're turning into a little bit of Kentucky. They're going to be like 5-0. And you're like, oh, look at
that. Because that Colorado game is massive. Because obviously it's the rivalry and the history and everything. And in prime time, it's going to be a big time nationally televised game. But if they can get past that game, like, this team can legit start like 6-0, 7-0 or something. So I don't know how good they're going to be, but the schedule isn't bad to start off. But like you're saying, That last run, you know, at Ohio State, at USC, at Iowa in there, that's not going to be easy. They could definitely be looking at a Florida Gator-esque season, starting 5-2 or something and ending up 5-7.
Well, that's all I've got, Matt Green. Anything else you want to throw out there before we wrap up here tonight?
That's all I got, man. It's good to be back with you. You know, I'll see you again 7 days from now, man.
Absolutely. We'll do let's do top 10 coaches in the sport right now next week. Let's do some.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Some fun listicles here as we continue on our off-season program. Still all kinds of college football stuff. Who knows what happens in the world of college football over the next week. More role changes. Maybe that we have a CFP update. You never know. I just don't
feel like... People love a good listicle. Maybe we'll go like top 10 loudest stadiums or something. That'll be a logical debate that no one will be biased at all about.
Tennessee won, and then
people will blow up in the YouTube comments or anything. They'll there be very go. Rational.
This has
and,
been
and
Ingram,
unbiased.
Radio voice of the Atlanta Braves, so and I'm
well.
Here to tell you that you've
Matt
reached
Green,
the end
always
of
a pleasure,
today's episode
and I will talk
of the
to you
Chase Thomas
week.
Podcast.
Yes, sir.
As a friend of the podcast, I'd like to say thank you for listening to today's episode, and hope you return for the next one. To show your support for the program, tell a friend or coworker or even a family member about the program. And if you're an Apple Podcast listener, leave the show a rating and a review. It goes a long way. That'll do it for me. But don't forget to listen to myself and the rest of the team at 680 The Fan and the Braves Radio Network this season. Go Braves!
Chase, I think I'm going to hear more about you. I really do. I think you've got a way about you, but you're interviewing. Mm-hmm. Pleasantness, you're smart. So I think I'm going to hear big things about you.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.